Listen to the show in HD at 100.3 HD2 FM.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
Happy Sunday to you here on ESPN 1000. I'm Jeff Meller along with Brian Hanley. Hanging out with you till 11 o'clock today. Bulls on tap here. Going to chat a little bit about the Hawks this upcoming week as well. They've got a big draft, having the first overall pick. We'll do that a little bit later in the hour. Of course, we've got your White Sox coverage coming your way at 12:30 today. Pre-game, Connor McKnight there. Glenn and DJ on the call of White Sox and Red Sox, the series finale, which is currently tied up at one game apiece before the Sox head out on a 7-game West Coast trip. So the Bulls, they got into the draft, Bri. They ended up trading two future second-round picks to the Washington Wizards for the 35th overall pick so that they had the right to go ahead and select Tennessee forward Julian Phillips, who actually registered the highest vertical at the NBA draft combine. So he can, in the game where jumping is certainly an asset, the Bulls got themselves the best leaper in the draft.
Can he jump out of a swimming pool? Because we were excited about that at one point, too, with the Bears. He can't shoot a three or make a three to save his life, so he'll fit right in.
Shooting. Is that important in the modern NBA?
It could be on certain nights. I don't know. That was exciting. I couldn't sleep that night. I was so just turning tossing over that.
My sarcasm detector is going off right now, Bri.
But I'm going to hold AK to his word because in the post-draft conference, he put himself out there, didn't he? He made a little bit of a promise.
I think he did.
Well, I think we made a move in the draft. I know it's a disappointment. It's not in the first round, but we did. But they will have to wait until the free agency and to see what we look like after that.
The setup to that was, you know, what's the message to fans who are disappointed that all you did was make, you know, a pick in the second round? And so that was him saying, you know, wait until after free agency. I believe that's what you were intimating, right?
Yes, right. So June 30th, free agency begins, and AK just told you don't jump to conclusions. You have a draft, you have trade, and you have free agency. Those are your three ways to build a team no matter the sport, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now we're down to free agency. And he went on to say that ownership, the Reinsdorfs, Michael and Jerry, have greenlighted his possibly going into the luxury tax territory if he and Mark Eversley can convince the Reinsdorfs that whatever free agents or just maybe one premier free agent could make them a top six team in the conference, which is a start. I mean, I don't know what to make of this, Jeff. This team is 28th in winning percentage over the last six seasons in the NBA. Now, I never thought, I mean, since the six championships, that's a long stretch to be down in the basement of the NBA, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to point to the winning record and from post trade deadline to the end of the season, even though they bowed out in the play in round.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to point to that they played competitively against better teams last year, the better teams in the league. So they're 2 games under 500. I don't know what standard you're using. The entirety of a season, the past 6 years, and they haven't been here for 6 years, obviously, the new front office, but or do you hang your hat on that continuity was the way to go because they had a winning record down the stretch even without Lonzo Ball, and they did come out and say, we're not playing that game. Well, check back at training camp, we'll see where he's at. He's off crutches. They pretty much said he's done. He won't be part of this thing.
Here's the official word from AK on Thursday about Lonzo Ball's status.
Well, he's recovering nicely. I think last month he got off the crutches and, you know, he's recovering, doing his rehab. You know, everything is going well. Going into off season, I think our expectation is that he's not coming back next season. And he's going to continue on his recovery. If he comes back, it would be great, but we're just going to treat this offseason and getting ready for the season that he's not going to be back next season.
Is there any chance of you guys maybe waving and stretching? Is that on the table at all?
No, it's not. Not at this time, no.
All right, so you heard him say they're not going to plan on him being back next season. Seems like, fine, that's the way, the prudent way to approach it. Seems like it's also a year late. And yes, the way you're approaching it, there's no other way to handle his current situation. Like, okay, thanks, Captain Obvious. We appreciate it. But the reality is that if you were still pretending like he was going to come back and be the player that he once was, well, then that's grounds for, hey, you know, you probably shouldn't be in that position if that's the, you know, way you were trying to approach it. So that's obvious. The problem is, and here, I do want to let fans hear that the one you referenced, the idea of the luxury tax, right? So what does that essentially mean? Because he's been very open about wanting to re-sign Vucevic. They've also talked about wanting to bring back Kobe White. And, you know, I think he also basically said that they're going to go ahead and, you know, for Io DeSumo put, the, you know, they're going to make him a restricted free agent. So they're going to make him an offer. So they're basically going to be up against the tax anyway, if all that comes to fruition. So this was AK talking a little bit more about how they're going to be competitive if their roster is virtually unchanged.
I think it all depends, you know, on free agency, how that goes. And, you know, Jerry and Michael have been always open with me to go into luxury tax if our team is competitive, top four, top six in the East. It, you know, if there are players in free agency that we can, you know, there we go. That can improve our team, and we're competitive. We'll retain our free agent.
So you do feel like you can go into the tax?
Yes.
So you feel like you can go into the tax, and you heard him say yes. And of course, the obvious joke is, as the phone is ringing, it's probably Jerry on the other end, because they're hearing him say, I've been assured I can go into the luxury tax if we're competitive.
Hang on there, AK.
That's not what we meant by that. Are you sure about that?
But we're going to hold them to the promise of judge us after the free agency, right?
We will.
Do you like, the Athletic floated this trade, Fred Van Vliet coming to the Bulls for Lonzo Ball and his expiring contract, or what, two more years, whatever it is, because Toronto needs to get above the floor of the salary cap. So they need bad money on the books. But you have to throw in P. Will. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
A couple things I don't want to happen. Please sign Derrick Rose to a 1-day deal and retire him as a Bull. I'm all for that ceremony and the feel good. Beyond that, don't sign him as a possibility to, you know, give depth at point guard, because if you're not paying attention, the game's gone. Okay. So
yeah.
Don't give me seashells and balloons and all that stuff and tell me Derrick Rose is something to get you in the top 4 to 6 in the Eastern Conference. I don't want to see that happen. And the idea that Kobe and AO is going to be that you're going to do point guard by committee, that doesn't work for me either. So go out and get a legit guy who defends, who can shoot, who's a good decision maker, who's got connections to Mark Eversley and DeMar DeRozan, and seems to be a good fit for the Chicago Bulls. And that same press conference, by the way, AK defended the Vooch deal.
Yeah,
they gave up all the draft capital, right?
Yep. Yeah. So now it's officially done, right? We know with that final Jet Howard selection, Dwight Howard's son, you know, or I'm sorry, not Dwight, Juwan Howard's son, Jet Howard, you know, drafted by the Magic there. The trade is now officially complete. We know all the principals involved. And so AK was asked specifically, hey, so now that we know what you officially gave up, what are your thoughts about that Vucevic trade?
I think it was a beginning where we try to build here in Chicago. I think that transaction, when we brought Vuce here, showed everyone that we're trying to win. I think once we brought Vooch, you know, we brought in DeMar, we brought Alex Caruso, we brought Zoe, and I think, you know, that started, you know, trying to, you know, improve our team and try to be competitive. And, you know, I thought that deal worked out pretty well for us.
Agree to disagree, but okay. That's well, just
which
me.
Is why you have to re-sign Vooch, and they're talking about a three-year deal.
For that
to have any legs at all, you have to keep him here, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, otherwise you can't make that argument. Hey, and I'm guilty as charged. I was on the air here. I think I was filling for Cap that morning,
yeah.
And we were a few minutes from going into transition when the news broke that they were making the deal with Orlando and Vooch was on his way. And change for change's sake, I was ecstatic. It's just because it's like, how are you going to move this thing forward? You have to do something bold. And in the rearview mirror, it doesn't look so great. But at the time, I was just Joe fanboy, and I was all for it. I mean, we were all excited about what, you know, AK was doing to make a splash.
Now, I will be your defense attorney on that one. I was not in that camp, but I remember I was actually. I was on spring break, so I was in Colorado, but I was listening to you and plenty others on the station on the app that day because I was curious. I was like, hey, they just made a big move, so it piqued my interest. So I threw up in the app and listened to almost everybody on the station kind of applaud it. But I also think that was the blinders that a lot of Bulls fans had on at that point, where we were so conditioned to watching John Paxson and Gar Forman do absolutely nothing at every trade deadline, right? And so to finally see...
Or do the wrong thing.
Yeah. But
LaMarcus Aldridge?
Correct. But even those were like, you know, draft night deals. Whenever the trade deadline rolled around, the Bulls were never making any significant moves, right? That was always the most frustrating thing about a Bulls fan is we could all see their deficiencies. Even when things were going well in the best of times for Derrick Rose, you knew they needed, you know, a complimentary shooting guard to stand next to him. But they never really did anything to alleviate that issue. And so that was always the most frustrating part, is you knew what the weaknesses were on the team, but they never made a move. So I think, you know, just the fresh approach from the front office and the fact that that Vucevic had, you know, all-star on his resume, and he was somebody, a big, who could shoot the ball. I understood why people got excited about it. Now, I personally didn't like the future assets that were going back, but nevertheless, I understood why people were like, finally, we have a guy who's willing to go out and make a move. And after years of watching Paxson Gar kind of stand pat, I understood why just that is something that's novel and new, and people are happy to see it. You brought up Fred VanVleet. You know, if they trade for him,
that's a sign and trade. By the way,
I was just going to say they're going to need VanVleet to be a you know, a willing party to come to Chicago.
$125 million might, you know, make him happy to come go anywhere, and that's what apparently he's looking for in a 4-year deal. And this is the point we talked about. You know, draft, trade, and free agency. That's how you build any kind of organization. No free agents have been knocking down the Bulls' doors for 10 years, right? It's not even a stop on the free agent tour anymore. So you have to do something like a sign and trade for a guy like that who's going to opt out of a contract and be an unrestricted free agent, because, and he's an Illinois native or
Rockford. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, there are reasons he might, again, Mark Eversley, DeMar DeRozan, there might be, and $125 million, by the way, might be enough to say, well, sure, why not? Because Toronto, he's going nowhere with Toronto. He's pretty much done with Toronto. But the fact that AK says, well, watch us in free agency, what are you selling in free agency? I mean, what's your vision? And if you're not going to go in luxury tax territory in a huge way and overpay, because the last time, you know, I looked, we weren't getting LeBron and D-Wade. We were getting Carlos Boozer as a consolation prize. It's not been a destination. The Bulls are not a destination for anyone who's serious, a serious talent in the NBA, because they're going to get paid somewhere and they'd rather go where they're going to win.
312-332-3776. Bulls fans, are you willing to be patient? Are you going to give AK a little bit of time and see what happens and how it plays out in free agency? Or are you frustrated and do you think that they're stuck where they're at right now? Feel free to give us a call. Mellor and Hanley on ESPN 1000.
the longest 5 minutes of my life. You know, this is when I started getting the butterflies, and yeah, this is where I started seeing my family get silent. Everyone watching their watch. Yeah, then I got called, and I went to the back, and yeah, you know, I was congratulated by a lot of people there. I saw Adam Silver, shook his hand again, gave him a hug. Then someone gave me this, you know. Someone knew this was happening somehow. And yeah, you know, I just got a lot of love.
That voice will become much more familiar to you as the years pass on. That is the most recent number one overall pick in the NBA draft. Victor Wembanyama, the 7'5" center drafted by the San Antonio Spurs on Thursday night. And boy, there was a lot of debate about the NBA draft and whether or not the fact that people are now not as familiar with the players at the top of the draft, because a lot of them are not players who we've seen in college. And if they are somebody we've seen in college, it very likely was a one and done situation. Four of the top five players drafted in this past draft, Bri, Mellor and Hanley here on ESPN 1000, did not play college basketball. And the one who did, then the second overall pick, Brandon Miller, only played 1 year at Alabama. So,
crazy, right?
Yeah, it's definitely, there's been an evolution as to how players get to the NBA. There is, of course, the G League now. Scoop Henderson, the third overall pick by the Portland Trail Blazers, he played in the NBA's G League. So right after high school, instead of he forewent college and ended up playing in the G League. Then you have Amen and a Sir Thompson, twins, who went 4 and 5, the first time that twins have gone, you know, in the top five in the NBA draft. They went 4 and 5, and they played at Overtime Elite, which is essentially a counter program to
the G League.
Yeah, it's its own entity. So it's an oddity that these players who are coming into the draft are now no longer familiar faces like it once was. And I'm curious, though, from my perspective, not so much. I'm okay learning new people. That doesn't bother me as much. But the evolution of draft coverage, what we're seeing now, Thursday, I can't remember the product, the television product, ever being. It was such a we're giving everyone the feel good story here. I understand the interviews with the players, but now they're incorporating the interviews with the players' family and parents as well. And it's the combination. It's not just ESPN draft broadcasting the draft, but they've also got the counter programming of ABC showing folks the draft. But there is a simulcast, essentially,
with the Manning brothers.
Well, there's a simulcast of Monica McNutt doing the interview of the player and the families. So now the ESPN draft coverage, which I primarily watch because, if you're somebody who loves to root for the feel-good story, that's great. I have no problem with it. But I thought that's what the ABC draft was for. But now it's come to a point where everything is about it. Listen, it's a great achievement for players who have worked their entire life to reach this goal, and they have done it, and it's great. It's awesome. I'm not going to belittle that in any way, and I understand the achievement, and I understand how proud they are. I understand how proud their parents are of them. But as a consumer of basketball, watching ESPN, I felt like the entire broadcast was completely lacking in analysis of what these players were going to bring to this team and what I could expect. And I think it's more important when we're less familiar with these players we're being introduced to.
I'm with you. And I guess they're going with the idea that most people are casual fans and rather hear the background, you know, give you an idea of who the kid is. And when you're talking about Victor Wembanyama.
Wemby.
Yeah, Wemby. I mean, even though everyone knew that San Antonio was selecting him with the first overall pick, just like Kyle Davidson's going to select Connor Bedard, you heard, you know, what it meant to him when the moment actually arrived, even though he knew it was coming.
Which,
but I'm with you. If you're playing for elite or whatever the glorified club, I mean, all they are really places to go to perfect your game to mm-hmm. make you more attractive to the NBA, right? But it's not like you're watching the NCAA tournament for one, if not 2 years, and watching that kid star on the biggest stage under the brightest lights, right? So I'm with you. You'd like to have someone breaking down the game or telling me why he was selected second, third, fourth, fifth, or whatever. But I think it's just they always err on the side of hardcore fans are going to find that, and we're trying to entertain as much as anything else. So let's just go the path of least resistance and talk to mom and dad and coach and whoever else can add to the feel good.
Well, listen, that's and I agree with you. That's probably the when they're sitting down in the production meetings and talking about, okay, how are we going to approach this? I get it, and I understand why you might err on that side. But there used to be a time when I would watch the draft and actually feel like I was learning a lot about how the league was changing and what was happening. But the problem is now, like, when you're incorporating the interview with the parents sitting next to them, that needs to stop.
I mean, the headline would be if mom and dad said, well, we don't think he's all that anyway. I mean, if mom came out and said, I think he's overrated, now you got a story, right? I mean, what do you think mom and dad are going to say about Junior?
And here's the other issue. It's different for the players. They deserve their moment, and Monica McNutt or whoever you want in that role interviewing them, that's cool. I don't need their family or their parents sitting next to them anymore. Let that moment happen. You can show me the visual of the hugs and everybody crying and excited. And if it takes an extra minute to get to the interview with the player, that's fine too. It's preferred. I don't want the interview with the parents anymore because, again, as a parent of a kid, I understand how emotional that moment is and how sure. great that achievement is. I get it. But for the majority of the parents who are sitting in front of the television camera, that's the first time they're ever doing an interview like that, right? The players are a little bit different. If they're going to overtime elites like the Thompson twins, they're training for that, right? If they're in college basketball, they're used to getting a post-game interview.
Yeah.
But like you said, the parents are just going to throw a bunch of praise at their child, which is great, but it adds nothing. And the problem is now, too, the way it was executed on Thursday night, every parent who came afterwards, every subsequent parent who was giving an interview, it was so repetitive. They all kept saying the same thing. And I don't fault them, right? Again, they just heard the parents before them say something like, they've worked their entire life. We're so proud of them.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
this is only the start.
Right?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Stop. It was way too much of the draft. I don't need the parents and family interviews anymore. And then it's ridiculous too. It seems silly when you're going to ask the player a question, maybe a second question, if they're eliciting some sort of personality for you, and then the parents get one question. What are we doing here? It doesn't make any sense to me as a television product, which it is, if that's the way you're going to approach it, especially, Bri, when you have a counter programming on your own network, on an ABC. That's what
platform,
ABC
yeah.
should be for.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
you need to differentiate which one is which, because I was just, it was a disaster. And don't even get me started about the fact that half of them are wearing the wrong hats because they've been traded.
Yeah, I can't add to that. I agree with you on all points. The one thing I will say over the years have covered all these drafts in different leagues, the maturity level of a 19-year-old Wemby or a 17-year-old Connor Bedard, it's amazing how they've dealt, and with social media exploding even in the last 5 years, 6 years, whatever, being a focal point for all those years on all those different, everyone wants a piece of you. Everyone's got their eyes on you. To be able to handle that pressure or whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
and do it, for the most part, they do it in a top-notch class way, and it doesn't impact them negatively. I'm impressed with the maturity when you're talking about kids, basically 17, 18, 19 years old.
No, you're absolutely right. The maturity level of some of the players, and it certainly helps when, to what we were just kind of referencing there, when you're an athlete and you have designs on potentially going pro at a young age. We've heard all the stories about Connor Bedard, and we'll talk a little bit more about Bedard. Maybe if we get a chance, if Mark Lazarus, if his plane has landed in Nashville yet, he'll join us here shortly. But so we'll talk a little bit more about Connor Bedard. But Victor Wembanyama, essentially, when he was 12 years old, decided every move after that was, you know, how he was going to become an NBA player and what he was going to do to accentuate that, to the point where he started learning English as a second language at a very young age because he felt it was very important. So when you heard his voice there as we were coming into the segment, it didn't sound like somebody who had just learned English within the last year and a half or two. He's made it a point to make sure that as a second language, English almost sounds like his first because he thinks it's very important because he understands he's going to be a global brand going forward. He already is. And so it was something that he recognized was important. And so, yeah, it's
at age 12.
It's insanity, that. Right?
Yeah, but well, look, having just been over to Europe is every 25 years, I make it a point to travel to Europe. And everyone's like, well, was language a barrier? I'm like, no, because everyone there understands English.
Yes.
They speak 2, 3, 4 languages. And I'm the dumb American.
You ugly American.
Yeah, who took, you know, 4 years of German, and I can count to 20, and I can probably order some food and beer in Munich or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, it's not instilled in us at any age that we should be bilingual at a minimum. And around the globe, it's amazing, and it's always astounding to me how everyone knows English as part of the 2 or 3 languages they know. And most of us can't speak English correctly on a regular daily basis. I'm guilty of that as well.
Especially those of us who host radio shows. He's Hanley. I'm Meller. We'll dive into why Wednesday is going to be a huge day for the Hawks. We'll talk about it next here on ESPN 1000.
The first overall selection in the 2023 NHL draft belongs to the Chicago Blackhawks.
Back to being good. How about that? The Chicago Blackhawks will have the first overall selection in Wednesday night's NHL draft taking place in Nashville, that hockey hotbed that is Nashville. It actually has been for the last 15 to 20 years. So not going.
Boy, is that city grown up since when the Predators first.
Right?
I was covering the Hawks back then. And I mean, first of all, it was like 2 blocks of honky-tonks, and
yes.
Then there's a bail bonds place, and there's a boarded up. I mean, there was really no there. You know, there's the Ryman Auditorium. Okay, you could see Nashville in like an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just every country star has a bar now, huge bar.
Yep.
And it's just people are moving there in droves because it's a desirable place to live. Yeah, it's become a sports hotbed, not just obviously hockey, but boy, is that city and grown up in a huge way.
Yeah, Smashville these days. But so they will be hosting the NHL draft on Wednesday night, where Connor Bedard will make his entry into the league, and of course the Blackhawks will be selecting him. I'm going to go ahead and go out on a limb there and say that he will be the selection by the Hawks, and this is. You know, they have a generational player now who will be adding some intrigue to the team. And they haven't come out and said it, but I think the expectation is that he will be on the roster next year for the Hawks. He's not going to go, you know, hang out in the minors. He's going
to
be.
Yeah, here. Let's see. Go out to Rockford if you want to see the phenom that is Connor Bedard. And by the way, if you're a hockey parent or parents, name your kid Connor. That's the first step in getting your kid to the NHL to be a deity. And Connor McDavid, Connor Bedard, just got to start with Connor.
Connor Murphy.
Connor McKnight.
Oh, wait. Yeah.
Connor Murphy. Okay. See, there's a flaw in every...
I've taken it a little too far.
Yeah.
So I was gone the last couple weeks in Hawaii. And Connor Bedard, one of the stories that some folks may have heard, but plenty of others may have not, when he was, I don't know exactly, I forgive me because I should have looked this up. I don't remember the age. I think he was maybe 12 or 13. Well, his parents wanted to go to Hawaii on vacation, and he grew up in Vancouver, and they told him they were headed to Hawaii, and he was completely against it. He did not want to go to Hawaii because he knew that there was no ice in Hawaii. Yeah. And the compromise they made was that he joined some like rollerblade league for a couple of weeks in Hawaii. I didn't even know these existed.
But I didn't either.
He brought his stick and his rollerblades to Hawaii. And when they got to the airport and they were checking their bags, the person at the checkout counter or the check-in counter said, "This is a first. I've never had anybody check a hockey bag as they were going to Hawaii." And
that's crazy.
That's Connor Bedard. And now I'm not, I kid you not, Brian, as I was walking through the resort I was staying at in Maui a week ago, I saw two parents with their kid, and their son had himself his hockey stick in a hockey bag. Kid, you not.
You should have gotten to ask the name so we can keep tabs on that kid because he's out. We're just talking about how Wemby and how they know at 12 and 13 that every step they're making is on the road to the pros, right? And he didn't want to go a week or two, whatever, how long his parents were going to be in Hawaii with mm-hmm. him to let his legs go. He was going to get his skating in, whether it's on wheels or not.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that tells you the commitment. And he wasn't taking 2 weeks off. He wasn't taking a vacation. That's crazy. And I've never been to Hawaii, so I've got like 1,000 questions for it. Did you have spam? That's like a thing in Hawaii, right? That's a delicacy.
It is. I did not. Okay. Yeah, no. The word is that they do the best job of preparing spam as a delicacy. I ate a lot of fish, clearly, because we were, you know, near the Pacific Ocean, so we took advantage of that. Had a lot of great meals. It was an awesome experience. So much to do. The one thing I noted to my wife, and now Tom Thayer, who folks are very familiar with, he actually resides in Hawaii during the off season.
It's good to be Tom in the off season.
It absolutely is. Yeah. So glad to have him aboard as a teammate.
Absolutely.
Here at ESPN 1000, your new home of the Chicago Bears. But I've heard Tom talk about this, and I completely get it now, or at least I heard Jeff Joniak tell the story to us about how when he went to go visit Tom Thayer, he actually stayed at Tom's place. I believe Jeff brought his daughters, and they were hanging out at Tom's place, and, you know, great host, gracious host. And the only thing with Tom is that, as Jeff tells it, you know, he's very particular about how he does things around the house, and, you know, he's up early. At 5 a.m., he's a surfer, so he's up early, and he's in bed early as well. You know, we're talking 8:30 at night. It's bedtime for Tom. And so when Tom wakes up at 5 in the morning, it's everybody's up around the house because Tom's up, and he's not going to, you know, change his routine. Yeah. He's just going to go about the day. And I think
there's no breakfast at 8. You better be ready to go at 6.
But I will say is that, you know, because it does get warm, obviously, during the day, and you're closer to the equator and the sun, it's a real thing. It's blazing out there, and that's totally cool. But so because of that, you know, getting up at 5 in the morning makes perfect sense because it's 65, 70 degrees at that time. You can get a lot done, especially if you want to do something active outside. And if you wake up at 5 in the morning, chances are that you're very readily available to go wind down at 8 o'clock at night because you've put in a full day, right?
Yeah.
And the one thing, I mean, it's obvious, but with a 5-hour time difference from the central time zone to Hawaii time, for me, every sport, like I was there when the NBA finals were wrapping up, when the NHL finals were wrapping up, and of course baseball was going on, every sport was over by like 5:30 at night. I could very easily see why Tom Thayer has the 5 a.m. to 8 p.m. approach during the day, because everything's over as a sports fan by 6 p.m. You can do whatever you want. You can go ahead and have a dinner and then call it a night at 8 o'clock and be up and ready to go at 5 in the morning. And it makes perfect sense to me now.
And island time, happy hour is not 5. It's like 3,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Everything's moved up.
I would say 1. Yeah.
Well, if you're on vacation, again, haven't been to Hawaii, but I would think, the Mai Tais or whatever, if you're at a nice resort, I'm sure they're readily available. Oh, if you want to start at 5 in the morning, you probably could find a way to do that.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. The Mai Tais, the lava flows, the pina coladas, they were all readily available whenever you wanted and needed one. And they were definitely flowing, at least for me and my wife. The kids, we got them the virgin lava flows, so they were still taking part, let me tell you. The one thing that I wasn't expecting when we got to our resort in Maui, penguins. They had African penguins at our resort, and it was...
Okay, so there's no ice for hockey kids. But the African penguins, I'm sure, didn't get on the plane by themselves and say, hey, let's go to Maui.
Yeah.
Is that the best? I mean, I'm sure it's interesting for everyone at the resort. I'm sure the penguins, if they had a vote in it, might not have been willing.
Now you sound like my son, because my son was guilt tripping us for enjoying the penguins, even though they were probably one of his favorite things about the trip. The African penguins live 15 to 20 years in the wild, longer in captivity. So you can hate on, you know, the resort taking care of the penguins, which I think they do a pretty good job. And I think as an African penguin, if you had your choice, I mean, you can be wined and dined and have, you know, fresh fish catered to you every morning.
Just don't give them spam.
You could go out in the wild and try and fend for yourself and probably lop off 10 years of your life expectancy. The choice is yours, Bri.
Well, I've been to the Peabody Hotel where they march the ducks. Was it ducks? They go through the lobby. It's been a long time. But that's like a thing. At 5 o'clock, everyone's there to watch whatever that is. I don't know. But
that I'm unfamiliar with. So
yeah,
It looks like ducks.
Yeah, it looks like.
Do the ducks walk at the Peabody?
Well, and there's like a duck handler. That's his job, is to be, you know, duck master or whatever you call him. I don't think they had duck on the menu, though. And I don't like duck to eat or walk through the lobby either, necessarily.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of duck myself so much.
No, never really. No, thanks.
312.
Now, you know, cut into a penguin. What? No.
All right.
No, don't serve
that.
Stop
it. 312-332-3776. Break up the Reds. They finally lost, but they have been rolling as of late. We'll chat about that. And a big injury. We got an update, and it is not good around Major League Baseball. And some final notes about the White Sox as well. Pre-game coverage starts at 12:30 with Connor McKnight. Meller and Hanley on ESPN 1000.
Listen to us now, live on the ESPN Chicago app. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago.
This is a journey.
Meller and Hanley wrapping things up here till 11 o'clock on ESPN 1000. White Sox and Red Sox conclude their three-game set later today. Pre-game coverage at 12:30. First pitch at 1:10. White Sox will start Tanner Banks today, which means they are looking at a bullpen game as they try and take the series from the Red Sox. Meanwhile, the Cubs find themselves down in the second game of the London series. They trail the St. Louis Cardinals 6-4. Things started out so well as the Cubs jumped out early 4-0. But Brian, your boy Marcus Stroman, the contract negotiations are not going his way anymore.
Yeah, we started the show by, you know, what? Hey, Jed, what's the delay here? Let's get Marcus Stroman signed to an extension. And very unlike Marcus Stroman's start, 6 earned runs, 9 hits, and 3 1/3. Only a couple strikeouts, to your point. He's not a strikeout guy, but they were just basically hitting, getting him on, getting him over, and getting him in with singles. So he wasn't getting pounded by long ball or anything yet. Worst start, I think, arguably worst start of the season for Marcus Stroman. And we were asking, you asked, you know, what's the number to sign Marcus Stroman to an extension? And we went on to the conversation about where does Lucas Giolito fit in, whether with the Reds or the Cardinals. And I guess the question there, too, is what's the number for Lucas Giolito should the White Sox want to re-sign him after his contract is up this year? He's making $10 million and change because they didn't want to pay Carlos Rodon. I assume they're not going to pay Lucas Giolito what the market rate would be for a guy like that. But if they end up trading him to Cincinnati or St. Louis. He's going to get paid somewhere if he continues to have 10 strikeout outings like he did the other night.
Yeah, and, you know, bad start, but maybe more concerning. And, of course, we're on right now, but monitoring around, it looks like Stroman during the game was shaking his hand multiple times throughout the fourth inning. So, you know, that was before he left the game. Obviously, it could have been just his performance anyway, but the fact that he was, and I'm watching video right now of him shaking his hand during Cole Goldschmidt's at bat during the fourth inning. So, you know, let's hope, obviously, that's a bigger import is Stroman's health, because obviously it's going to, it's tough to envision the Cubs, you know, making this run for the NL Central if they don't have Marcus Stroman fronting their rotation for any, you know, extended period of time. So they are currently three games back of the Reds, who did lose for the first time in 13 games. Their 12-game winning streak was snapped yesterday by the Braves. And I'll tell you what, man, the Reds, who would have thought it, man? Like they're doing this without any real pitching, too, Bri. That's the key, is that their starting pitching has really done nothing special over their winning streak. Their lineup, though, is just the young prospects that they have finally arrived, and they still have one more really good hitter left in the minors, Christian Encarnacion Strand, who they don't really have a spot for in the lineup. Joey Votto has returned.
Which is saying
something. And that's what I mean.
Right?
So, like, they are loaded. Ellie De La Cruz became the first player in Major League Baseball history to hit for the cycle and steal a base in the same game. He did that on Friday, and he did that in, I believe it was his 15th game as a major leaguer. So they're ready to
roll. They're going to be in the market for pitching.
They could use a Lucas Giolito.
Absolutely, they could. I don't know what the number is. I don't know. Obviously, you get him for this year and see how it plays out. You get him for the balance of the season. But I don't know that the White Sox, you can obviously trade him then sign him back here. But I think once he's gone, I don't think he's going to sign back here. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out for the White Sox and Lucas Giolito.
Yeah, that's one of those things where it always sounds better in practice than reality. Yeah. Like, you know, once the guy is actually traded away by the organization, like aside from Aroldis Chapman re-signing with the Yankees after they traded him to the Cubs, it's, you know, and they're the Yankees. So that's one thing that they're like, hey, you know, we're going to come play for the Yankees. And if you like it in New York and you can actually handle the pressure and you've done it, you can see why that's appealing. But oftentimes, once the guy has been dealt away and then he starts to look at other organizations and how things work there, you know, unless you're going to offer the absolute most money, or he just loved it there so much that, you know, they're like, I got to get back there. I can't envision living anywhere else. It's one of those things that just seems
better. Sounds good. Yeah.
But the reality of it actually playing out doesn't seem to happen all that often. Laz has finally landed in Nashville. He texted me. I think we're going to try and catch up with him next Sunday once the draft has actually concluded for the Blackhawks, because his flight did get delayed. But so we'll check back in with Mark Lazarus when we actually have some concrete picks from the Blackhawks. So hopefully that will work for all the folks out there.
Yeah, I hope Laz goes to that bar where Brian Sutter had, I think, Tyler Arneson up against the wall.
Yes, the good old days of the ABC line, Arneson, Bell, and Calder. You got to love hockey lines. They always have good nicknames.
Yeah. And Brian probably had a few pops in him at the honky-tonk and got tired of the kid and literally picked him up, put him up against the wall, and read him the riot act. Probably not the best coaching decision, and you couldn't get away with that now. In these days, but back then it was a different time.
Oh boy, I can't wait until we can actually get back to talking Hawks in a more meaningful way. That'll be fun, because and that all starts on Thursday night when the Hawks have the number one selection. They also have the 19th pick from the Tampa Bay Lightning, so we'll see if they stay there or if they actually look to move up. All right, that does it for us. Thanks to Kendra Smith for producing. Bri, thanks to you, my man. We will talk again next Sunday.
Always a pleasure. I got to let the Penguins in.
Ah, I love them. All right, Mellor and Hanley, thanks for listening, folks. White Sox pregame at 12:30.